welcome to the IAA Mobility Visionary Club here on LinkedIn Live, the interactive format where we are connecting you with the mobility pioneers who are shaping our future. If you're joining us for the first time, a very warm welcome. If you're an old hat, welcome to episode 11. Today, we are talking about the big C, crisis, and more importantly, surviving and thriving through a crisis with the help of resilient leadership. Here to talk about this topic today, I am very pleased to welcome the owner and CEO of Ready Group, Christian Reitmeier. Christian, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Sarah. Great to be here and tell my story.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it.
So for everyone, just imagine waking up tomorrow and learning that one of 10 companies in your supply chain has collapsed. That's not a scenario. That's the reality we are facing in Germany right now. 22,000 companies gone. More than 300,000 jobs at risk. And it isn't a German problem. It's a warning sign for the entire global automotive industry. While we race towards electric future and autonomous driving, some of us are forgetting one thing. Without resilience, without the ability to fail and recover fast, we might not survive long enough to see that future. I know this firsthand, believe me. I took over Ready Group, a technical service provider in the automotive industry with 400 employees in Germany and more than 700 abroad, from my father-in-law in 2014. We are specialized in containment activities, rework, supply chain management, industrialization of new suppliers, serving more than 1,200 clients around the world. Like many, I had a simple vision: grow at any cost. I aim to double the company, and I needed it to be fast. I wanted to shine. Being a pure optimist, I ignored all the warning signs. OEM project failed, cost pressure mounting, new and higher IT security regulations we hadn't factored into our business model. And yes, we forgot a lot. My numbers didn't lie, but I refused to believe them. I thought, if I work harder, save more, told myself, I can turn this around. Until one day, my former CFO, his name is Ralph, set me down and made it impossible to look away. That night, I sat alone in our empty office building, staring at the numbers, realizing this is over. It felt like playing Monopoly. You know that game where you don't have, when you run out of money, you're out. That's it. My mind started spinning around. Fears came up, many questions, concerns, worries about my family, my employees, their families. I said, this cannot be the end. And by the way, I never lost a monopoly. My poor young brother, he had to suffer. But I said, hey, I will find a way out here. And here's where the real story begins. We had no money. No banks would lend to us anymore. And yet we still had something very powerful. A team, a reputation, loyal customers, and the will to fight. That's when we discovered something many German entrepreneurs still don't know. Plan insolvenz. It's a German thing, a structured, fast-track insolvency process where you don't lose control about your own company. We know it from the US. They call it Chapter 11. In China, they just pivot overnight. But in Germany, failure was taboo. Yeah, it doesn't exist until now, that moment. This process, the whole plan insolvenz, allowed us to complete our entire restructuring in just a bit over 3 months because we had a good and solid plan. But it wasn't the legal process that saved us. It was something more human. I went personally to my employees and core customers, face to face and online. I told them the truth. I explained where we stood and what our plan was. And even when the salaries of my employees were at risk, most of them still trusted me. And when that money hit their accounts, maybe a little too late, but right in time, the trust became unbreakable. Communication is the key. Trust is the engine and the reliability for all stakeholders. Yeah, you have to really understand this and take this into account. So what saved us and what could save you if you are familiar with the situation, find yourself in there? It's first of all, radical transparency. Hiding bad news doesn't protect you. It destroys you. Second, involve experts early. You do not have to have all the answers, but you must ask the right questions. Win the trust of your people first, before customers, before the banks. Your employees decide if you survive. And finally, your customers. They will stand by you if you're honest, fast, and keep delivering. They don't want you to fail. They want you to keep supplying. The global automotive industry is facing its biggest transformation in 100 years. EVs, autonomous driving, AI, tariffs, it's all crazy. Exciting? But ask yourself this. Are you building or are you working in a company that's ready to survive the failure that will inevitably come before their success? Resilience isn't a buzzword. It's a survival skill. And it starts with leaders who dare to fail, learn fast, and rise stronger. On March 1st, 2020, we officially completed our plan insolvency and have been restructured, saved. Our success story could have started back then. All was prepared. Just try to remember, only 17 days later, March 18th, Germany went into the first COVID lockdown. That's the thing about crises. You don't get to choose when they happen, but you always get to choose how to respond. We survived that crisis too. And today, my company is stronger than ever because we don't just manage crises anymore. We lead through them. Thank you.
Christian, thank you. That was so moving in a way to hear someone speak about such a personal experience with such a difficult topic and to come out so resilient. It's really inspiring. You know, I was struck listening to you and thinking about this industry that you're working in. It's complex, it's fast moving. You've led this team through a period of significant transformation. What shaped your mindset when you were navigating this uncertainty?
You know, I was the optimistic guy. Optimism is important. But I also learned the hard way that realism is essential. Yeah. My mind shifted, you know, when I realized ignoring the signs, of trouble, and the problems got bigger and bigger. And probably all know that, you know, solve the problems once they arise. Mm. And, you know, don't try to postpone. They only get bigger and bigger. And so this is what I really now, you know, have implemented in my mind. Just face the things when they come up and solve them before they got really an issue.
Yeah. Yeah. I was struck by you saying trust is the engine. I think that's such a good line. You know, there's a lot of companies out there focusing on technologies, but in times of crisis, it's really about the people. I'm curious what you've learned about keeping teams aligned and motivated under pressure, but also under straight up hardship.
As I said, for me and, you know, my team, it was really essential how we communicated and that we treated the employees and everyone equal. Yeah, we have been really open in the communication, and it was a tough way. Yeah, telling them maybe you probably don't get your salary by the end of the month. It will take a couple of more days. Yeah, and you've seen their faces. Oh God, I have to pay my rent first of the month, and I don't get my salary. So we really took all their questions and their doubts really serious. We try to address it. We try to, you know, really show them the way out. But we always, you know, have been honest to them. Yeah, because there are things you cannot change. And don't try to hide it. Yeah, that was really that transparency. And by that communication transparency, we gained trust again. Of course, we lost, you know, doing such a step. And then, I think we rise stronger than before, because it's also when you manage a crisis together, it really, you know, sticks you together.
Yeah, brings you together. Crises can often be turning points. They can be transformation points. Can you share an experience where adversity perhaps unlocked some unexpected innovation or maybe even growth?
If you look at the automotive industry and, you know, this, I think one thing you have to understand that you cannot control everything. At least from my experience, I trust a lot in the people, and especially if they are in different cultures, if they are in different areas, I decided control is good, but trust is better. Does it sometimes hurt? Yes, it's not the best way always, but for me, I realized it's the best way to trust on the local knowledge of the people, on the power of the teams. In the different locations, in decentralized organizations, yeah, and that they know exactly how they will be successful. Basically, my goal is they don't need me. They are closer to the customers, closer to the employees. They know what to do. And I feel myself not, you know, being involved in everything. So it's not the micromanagement. It's really like supporting them, being more like a servant leader. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm there for them.
Yeah. I was struck when we were talking just before the episode started. You said to me, you know, we don't manufacture anything. We're in the people business. But I'm curious, Kristen, how you see digital tools evolving your firm's service offerings in the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years. I'm thinking here about things like predictive quality analytics, AI. Where is your head on that?
I mean, you mentioned it. Yeah, AI, everyone is talking about AI. Yeah, probably there's no conference and no workshop where you don't have an AI part in it. It's just like a big wave like coming all over. And yes, I think it is important, especially that you teach your organization not to be afraid of it. Mm. Yeah, be curious and don't think that AI is stealing your job. Yeah, just, you know, try them to have fun with it, to experiment, but also to fail. Yeah, and when I look at the whole industry. Everyone is talking about AI, about, you know, the robotics of the future, and we, you know, we don't need people anymore. I don't believe in that personally. I always think we need people, but we can use AI, we can use robotics, we can use a lot of machine learning to support us and to make the life for everyone easier. Yeah, I don't have the answer on all of that. We are also in the middle of it. Yeah, we have our next AI workshop next week. Yeah, in the company, and it's all about we're just like practicing. We're just using it. We see, you know, how does it feel? How does it work? And then at the end, trying to find out what fits to us. Mm-hmm. But I also learned and know that, I mean, we are a small company. Yeah, we do not have to be market leaders or first movers. Yeah. We watch the different trends. We watch what the big companies do, and we can be second, but we have to be good. Mm-hmm. And we have to pick the right solutions for us.
I'm curious about when we think about services, and people. How are you ensuring consistency and best practice sharing across your teams when you're delivering services in multiple client plants or countries? You talked a little bit about trust and about hopefully they don't need you, but tell us a little bit more about how you approach that topic, because I imagine it's quite complicated.
Yeah, yes. And I could have told you that, hey, we have the perfect system, yeah, to make sure that everyone is working the same way, the same process, the same system. Reality is that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, here, I decided a long time ago that I want to have a decentralized company. So mm-hmm. a lot of many companies with under one roof. Yes, we share the same culture and the same DNA. Yeah. But we also have to understand that people and companies in Southeast Asia, in India, they have different circumstances, different requirements. They have a different history than we, like in the industrialized countries here or in the US. So we always have to keep that in mind, that here in these countries, you know, we have a different focus. So yes, we try to make sure that we are on the same platform, that we support everyone from the headquarters perspective in terms of training, in terms of material and processes. But we also know that we shouldn't be too strict. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also let them do their own thing. Yeah. Yeah? And at the end, the result and the happy customer and the returning customer is the best proof for that. So it's not us, yeah, having the best control mechanisms and you know, pointing at them. It's like, hey, make your own experience. And if you grow by yourself in your country, that's the best proof that you do right. And of course, we support you. And we should all understand that making mistakes is good, but we shouldn't make the same mistakes again and again. Let's make mistakes. And we all know that the learning curve by making mistakes is the steepest, yeah? So we have to make mistakes in order to develop and learn.
What's been your most effective lever for scaling up capacity rapidly when a client has an urgent containment or crisis situation?
As you said, we are a service provider. So my main cost factor are the humans, my employee. So I cannot afford to have always, you know, reserves on the bank and, you know, just send them in and have them pre-trained. This doesn't work anymore. So we decided we go into partnerships, into corporations with, for example, with personal service providers, where we, you know, we get trained and pre-selected people. So we really work closely together with other service providers, and we try to help them understand our needs so they can serve us. And by that, you know, we hope that they understand our needs, we understand their needs, and by understanding the needs of each other, we can manage together and succeed together. We also stick to them. We don't use them as a cheap resource for recruiting, for example. Say, hey, no, this is a partnership. You have to make some money, but also we have to make some money. So let's see, you know, where this goes. And this is the same when I look at customers. I tell my teams always, hey, we need these customers that understand our needs as well. Yeah. So let's try to learn from each other and see who has the heart or the soul at the right place and who not. Yeah. So when we scale up, of course, we need a lot external partners and corporations in order to manage the volatility in the markets. But at the end, an honest no is also a good answer. Yeah. So sometimes we just can't scale up, or we need more time. And then we take more time. We don't do anything only to succeed.
An honest no is also a good answer. I think that's a really good takeaway.
And here you also see the difference in your customers. Yeah, the ones that really appreciate the honest no and then start working with you a way out of it, or the others that blame you for it. Mm. Yeah. So And we learned that, hey, we don't need that kind of customers.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find that clients are open to process consulting after a quality crisis, or is the mindset more focused on firefighting than transformation?
It's a good question. And
it's a sensitive issue. So
I know it is. It is. Just in general, when what we see in the market is, and that still surprises me, a lot of companies still do firefighting instead of investing a little bit in preventive actions, into project management before, you know, it goes wrong and the catastrophe comes up. I still don't understand why this is like it is, but it is how it is. And maybe it's part of the industry and the mindset or the management of the companies. I see, you know, there are the really well-managed companies. But this is from the whole culture they have. They, you know, they take projects serious. They invest from the really beginning. They want to be really good. They have a good communication to us and to their customers. And others, they try to hide. They try, you know, to save. They, I don't know. And at the end, they have to pay like 5 times more than the others. Yeah. Is it good for us? Unfortunately, yes. Yeah, but do I understand it? No. Yeah, we try to help. We offer solutions for both sides, fortunately. So it's okay. But is there a real learning?
Difficult. Yeah. Christian, I'm conscious that we're coming to the end of our time. So maybe as a last question, you could talk a little bit about, to what extent do you think that operational excellence is driven by centralized governance versus local ownership in international settings? You've touched on this a little bit, but go deeper.
As I mentioned before, I decided the best way for us to be successful is a decentralized system. We follow minimum rules. We follow regulations. We follow certifications. But I really experience it myself again and again that being, for example, German, I will never understand the Indians, 100%. So I need an Indian who understands the people, the culture, the language, or that. So from process excellence side as well, they do it sometimes. Some things they do differently, and it's a difference if you have a huge machinery, you just transport to another country, and it runs and works the same way. It works always, yeah. In our case, it's a lot people management. Yeah. So you have to consider other aspects as well. And so we adapt a lot. Yeah. We have our core message